Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for April 2nd, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is PW Torch Wrestling Night in America for after WrestleMania Night 2, two nights of WrestleMania this week. If you missed last night's discussion, it was a good one. So you can go into the archives of PWTorch.com and find that and listen to our Night 1 coverage. We're back here for Night 2 as well. Not as strong of a night as Night 1 was, but I think the overall package of WrestleMania was a thumbs up. What we'll do here is we'll go through the results of Night 2, and then we will talk to you either via email, wnialivecast@gmail.com, or by phone, 515-605-9345. Press 1 to talk. So we're going to take phone calls, we're going to take emails, and we're going to talk about WrestleMania Night 2. Lot to talk about here. Let's run down the card from the top of the evening, where we started with Brock Lesnar defeating Omos in the first match of the show. Kind of ironic that two of the bigger stars of the last 20 years in WWE, John Cena and Brock Lesnar, ended up leading off each night of WrestleMania. But as I tweeted out at Greg M. Parks, this opening match checked the three boxes that you were looking for this match. One, Brock Lesnar hit a few German suplexes on Omos. Two, Brock Lesnar hit the F5 on Omos. And three, they kept it short. So they checked all three of those boxes, which was really all that they needed to do to make this match successful. And it was. It was fine for an opening match. There was no major botches or anything like that. So this was a success, and I think the crowd was into it as well, whether it was the first match or whether they actually wanted to see the irresistible force versus the immovable object that WWE had sort of built this match up as. They were into it as well, so you got to give them credit for that. Match number two was the multi-team women's tag showcase match, which was won by Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. Rousey was still nursing the fractured elbow, the fractured arm that she had, and saw very limited ring time, but she and Shayna Baszler won. Not a surprise. They were far and away the biggest name duo in this match. So if this is, in fact, a way to find a number one contender, although it was never billed as such necessarily, if this is a way to find a number one contender team for the women's tag team titles, I think this is a good way to do it, and Rousey and Baszler make sense as that duo. Not a lot of heat for this one. In fact, this may have been the match with the least heat on either show. There was a moment, too, where I think Chelsea Green came off the top rope with a drop kick that Raquel Rodriguez purposely no-sold, like, you know, and that was, I think, was supposed to generate, you know, a buzz in the crowd or ooh or something like that, and they just, there was nothing. So didn't seem like they cared much about that. Hopefully we'll have a few on-site correspondents calling in to give us a little information on the crowd reaction, a little more in-depth on how the crowds were on this evening. Match number three was one of the more anticipated matches, I think, for a good portion of the audience of the two nights. It was the Intercontinental Championship triple threat with Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, and Gunther. Gunther ended up winning this. He retains the IC title, pinned Drew McIntyre, so there is the possibility now that it moves on to Gunther versus Sheamus, perhaps in a one-on-one situation coming out of this. So this was, I think this lived up to what were very high expectations for this match, with the beatings that all three men gave each other living up to, again, the high standards that were set in the minds of fans. So one of the strongest matches of either night of WrestleMania here. Match number four, Bianca Belair defeating Asuka to retain the Raw Women's Championship. This was another good match. I think the problem here is Bianca Belair, as we've talked about here on Wrestling Night in America in the past, was coming into this match pretty cold. She had another really great entrance, as she always seems to do for WrestleMania, but she just was not a hot commodity right now. Again, match was really good. You just hope that Belair gets some strong momentum built up. And part of it is just that the challengers, and there isn't a lot to the storyline she's been involved in. There isn't a lot of meat on those storylines, which hurts her a little bit as well. But she gets the win. I thought they could have shaved a couple minutes off of this one, maybe. I thought they kind of overstayed their welcome by a couple minutes, but it was a good match nevertheless. Then we had The Miz and Snoop Dogg. If you recall, on night one, The Miz ended up getting goaded into a match with Pat McAfee, who was a surprise, George Kittle getting involved as well. And the same thing was about to happen here, with the surprise being Shane McMahon, which, given his fallout with his father at the Royal Rumble, was the Royal Rumble last year. time flies. This was a big surprise, and it looked like they were setting up for a Miz-Shane McMahon match. However, on a leapfrog attempt, the first move Shane McMahon did, he tweaked his knee and was unable to continue. So an audible was called by someone, and it was genius because Snoop Dogg basically took Shane McMahon's place and punched Miz twice, gave him a people's elbow, and got the pin. And I think the fans were just excited about that, as they would have been with whatever the original plan was. So quick thinking on their feet by Snoop Dogg, by The Miz, by the referee Jessica Carr, by whoever was in her earpiece giving her instructions to pass on. So they really made chicken salad out of you-know-what that they were dealt there. But, yeah, so that's really where I think the show ground to a halt a little bit. You had two more matches left after this, and I thought night one was a lot better paced than night two. You had, you know, some really long entrances for these final two matches. You had very long gaps in between the two matches. So, that, I think, hurt the pacing as the show went on. They did end night two a little earlier than night one, which is nice because it is a Sunday night and people do have to go to work tomorrow. So there is that. But Edge defeating the Demon Finn Balor in Hell in a Cell. The match had to be stopped at one point because Balor was busted open. And, of course, we can't do blood, so they had to tend to him inside the cell. And for once, the medics breaking into the cell actually didn't lead to others breaking into the cell. So there was no judgment day interference on this one. But Edge does pick up the victory. I think you can quibble with that result a little, given that Balor is the full-time wrestler, and you don't know what is in store for Edge moving forward. But it turned out to be a pretty good match. And especially, you know, they didn't have the interference that we've come to expect from these sorts of matches, so that was a plus as well. And then the main event, Roman Reigns retaining the WWE Undisputed Championship, Universal is in there somewhere as well, over Cody Rhodes. Cody's mom, his wife, his child were at ringside, as well as the Negative One, which is Brody Lee's son, was at ringside as well. They had a ref bump mid-match. The Usos came out. Solo Sikoa was tossed from ringside early on. The Usos came out. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn neutralized them. So it went back to a normal wrestling match, and you thought it was going to end with Cody Rhodes giving multiple crossroads to Roman Reigns. But Paul Heyman distracts the ref. Solo Sikoa interferes, and Roman Reigns spears and pins Cody Rhodes. I can't for the life of me figure this one out. I've loved the Bloodline storyline as much as anyone, but it's kind of like Bill Belichick with the New England Patriots, right? You want to cut a player a year before rather than a year too late in terms of their performance. And you fear that with Cody not getting the victory here, you might hang on too long. And granted, they have tons of different ways they can continue to go with the Bloodline storyline. But this one, I really question very strongly the decision here to go with Roman Reigns. I just, and I'm sure maybe we'll have some callers and emailers call in and give me a perspective that I hadn't thought about before in the last 15 minutes anyway since the match ended. And it'll get me to rethink my position. But as of right now, I'm really dumbfounded by WWE results just because most matches can go either way. Most matches I can make a pretty good argument on both sides of the fence. This one I really struggle with. And I think there is a belief that Cody Rhodes can probably win this at Backlash or wherever. But if the end result is going to be Cody Rhodes winning, why don't you do it at WrestleMania on the biggest stage where he gets the biggest rub from it? And, you know, Cody has a lot of momentum right now. He had a lot of momentum going into this show. There's no guarantee that that momentum is going to stick with him at Backlash or wherever they do the title change. And if it's not Cody Rhodes, then who is it? You know, there's no other really obvious candidate, I don't think, at this point. You know, and there's been some suggestion online already that, you know, The Rock next year. Well, we were saying that this time last year. And so unless The Rock has given them more than a verbal commitment, I don't see how you can go in that direction and just, you know, sit on the sidelines and wait for that to happen next year for the next 365 days. You know, it's hard. It's hard for me to fathom this result right here. And I think, yeah, like I said, I can make an argument for most results. This one I really struggle with. So I want to hear from you, hear what you have to say about the finish of that main event. And anything else WrestleMania related, 515-605-9345, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. If you're someone who's listening live and either, you know, don't like to call in or can't stay up to hang on hold or whatever the case may be. So, you know, whatever it is, we understand. So we have those emails open for you as well. We are here each and every Sunday night, by the way, pwtorchdailycast.com. And we talk the big shows in pro wrestling. So I know we've got a lot of new listeners here. I hope you'll tune in going forward. Always love to hear from new folks as well as the usuals. And we start off with the usual here tonight on the phone lines. And this is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America for the second night in a row for WrestleMania Night 2. How are you doing tonight?
I am wonderful, and I know you're not. If I had my way, I would send you a box of Kleenex, Greg, because I know you're upset.
Well, it's not that bad. It's not to the point of tears yet, Reverend Keith. But I just have a little trouble understanding the intent behind it, is all.
I'm sorry, but I've got to get this out. I predicted this. I said it to you. I said it to Frank. I said it to Brandon LeClaire. I said it to Zach Haydon and many others locally and professionally, all on the podcast network all around. I said to you, you have to understand the story, Greg. Listen, I understand you want Cody Rhodes, the American Nightmare, to win the title. I admire Cody. I admire his story. I will always love the entire Rhodes family, always, from top to bottom. I met Dusty a number of years ago. God bless his soul. At the same token, with the story that they are telling with the bloodline and with all of the layers that they have added, what they're trying to do now by having Jay and Jimmy lose to Sammy and KO in night one, they were not going to allow the bloodline to be completely destroyed this weekend, okay? Cody will get many other opportunities, okay? But tonight was not his night. At the same token, if you follow the narratives over the past few weeks on both Raw and SmackDown, they have teased the fact that, okay, how would Roman respond when the cracks in the bloodline begin to boil or come to life? Now, they have come to life by virtue of the Usos losing the tag titles. So, how will Roman respond to the Usos tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw? How will Roman respond to them on Friday Night SmackDown? Because now he's the sole survivor of the weekend, okay? He still has both his belts. The Usos lost all four of theirs. So will Roman become more demanding? Will he become more agitated? Will he become more aggressive? Will he become more arrogant? So that's the story they're telling. And I said to you guys all along, I said, sure, everyone is – I was one of 10% of most people both on social media and on the podcast industry who thought that Roman would retain because I understood the narrative. So I'm trying to point that out to you. I mean, we all can opine, and I know you have your opinion just like Wade and everybody else has theirs, but that's the narrative that they're trying to bring out. The story moves to the fact that, okay, how will the Usos, likewise in turn, how will they respond to Roman? Will they get tired of Roman being abusive? So look at it from that angle. So give me your thoughts now that I've laid it out in that fashion.
Yeah, I think, as I said, there are many different ways the Bloodline storyline can go. What you've proposed based on the evidence that they've been building on TV is one way they can go. Another way they could have gone is the Bloodline is still together, but none of them have titles. And then you've got Cody Rhodes with the championship on his journey separately. I get the attention on the Bloodline and the focus on the Bloodline. It's the most interesting story WWE has done for years. There's a lot they can do with it. Ratings on SmackDown have been up for it. But you risk salting the earth by having Roman Reigns beating all of his challengers and having no other challengers left for him. And, you know, Roman Reigns is only as strong as the challengers presented to him. And now, yes, Cody Rhodes can challenge again, but he's not going to be in nearly as strong of a position as he was. There's no guarantee that he's going to be as over as he was. So I think you could tell a Bloodline storyline with, okay, Roman Reigns loses the title. Now nobody has the title. How does Roman Reigns, you know, you talk about Roman Reigns, how does he react to the Usos losing the title? Does he get more demanding? Does he, you know, the same could be said of Roman losing the title. You know, what's the dynamic now between Roman Reigns and the Usos? And I think that's a far more interesting dynamic because that's the Roman Reigns that we've not seen before. We've seen Roman Reigns as the demanding head of the table before. Like, however he's going to act to the Usos for losing the titles, we've seen that before. He doesn't treat the Usos well, whether they're champions or not. And so I think the more interesting thing would be, okay, now Roman doesn't have the title. And I've said this before over and over on this podcast. We've never seen that dynamic in the Bloodline where Roman doesn't have the championship. He's had the title for as long as this Bloodline storyline has existed. So if you really want to take a turn and amp up the Bloodline storyline, Roman without the title, what does that look like? How does he manage the Usos and Solo Sikoa and Paul Heyman without the titles? So I think you could, I don't think, you know, I think those are both the storyline you proposed, Reverend Keith, is fair. And I think that's probably where they're going to go. But I don't think that's any more interesting to me than Roman without the title. And I don't think it's a direction they absolutely had to go. Based on storytelling up to this point. So, and the benefit would have been now you've got a strong babyface on the other side of the ledger instead of just the Bloodline. And you know, it's kind of always the old Vince McMahon, you know, in booking meetings where he only cared about what John Cena was doing. What do we have for Cena would be always his first question. And he kind of lose interest after that. That's kind of the impression you get from WWE. What's the Bloodline doing? And then anybody else is kind of like second tier where, you know, if Cody has the title, you know, he's your top babyface now. He's the other guy who's in a really strong position to oppose Roman, and now you don't have that.
But why does Cody have to be the guy? I mean, I'm just being honest with why. I mean, just because
well, who else
he went
is there, though? He's beating everybody
that
else.
That doesn't mean – but listen to me, Greg. That doesn't mean that Roman has to lose the belt right now. I mean, you know, everybody's jockeying Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is one bad promo away from having the fans turn on him like they did in AEW when he tried to be the symbol
I
of America.
I disagree with that. The audience tonight was behind him as any top babyface
I said one bad promo away, Greg. I said one bad promo away.
I disagree. Okay. I disagree. I don't think they're that
disagree.
Close to turning out. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying to you, I think they made the right decision. Regardless of, you know, I admire Cody Rhodes, but I don't think he's the guy to take the belt off of Roman Reigns, and I'm going to stick to that. I said that to you guys 2 months ago. I said it last week. You know, just because he's the shining knight that came over from AEW doesn't make him the next WWE Undisputed Champion. I'm going to stand by that. And until it's proven otherwise, storyline-wise, you can say what you want. Wade Keller can say what he wants. Zach can say what he wants. The bottom line is I think WWE made the right decision by keeping the belt on Roman. Now, that's my second point. The third point is he's very close to a 1,000-day reign, which is historic. Why would they defeat that purpose just to put on the title on someone who has come back home after leaving the company because he was upset for being Stardust? So you got to look at it that way. They're telling multiple stories here. Sure, Cody Rhodes will get his rematch. He may get the belt, whether it's in Puerto Rico, whether it's in Saudi Arabia, or he may get it at SummerSlam. But my point is that with the story that they are telling, I think they made the right decision keeping the belt on Roman Reigns.
Yeah, I just don't think the 1,000-day reign – I get that it's a milestone, but – I don't think it means anything within the storyline of the bloodline. I don't think it's just a number at this point. Like he's been champion for almost 3 years. You know, I think that's your milestone right there. I don't think you need to hit a magical number that ultimately doesn't mean anything. You know, I disagree with that. And I think you're greatly underselling Cody Rhodes. I know you said you like Cody Rhodes and stuff like that, but I still think you're greatly underselling him as a potential top guy within WWE.
Well, we will see. I mean, you know, we all have our own opinions, but what I'm saying to you, I'm just focusing on tonight. I'm saying to you, Greg Parks, that I believe that WWE made the right decision by
I understand that's what you believe.
And I gave you three reasons why. I gave you three reasons why. The main reason was, number one, of the story that they're telling with the bloodline. Number two was the fact that I do not feel, and I know I'm in the minority. I even said to my wife that I'm one of 10% of people that felt that Roman was going to keep the belt. You know, the other 90% just knew that Cody was going to walk out of SoFi Stadium with the belt, okay? So that's my second point. And then the third point is that they are telling the story of the 1,000-day reign. I'm telling you what the story is about. All you have to do is understand the story, and you can understand the results. Booking is not hard. You just have to understand. Each match tells a different story. Once you know what the story of that feud or match is, any of us could write this stuff. You don't have to be a genius or Triple H or Shawn Michaels or Shane Helms and all them guys that work for WWE in the back. You don't have to be them to write this stuff. All you have to do is understand the narrative and the story that they're telling. So I just gave you 3 points. Just like when I preach, I give 3 points. I just gave you three reasons why Roman kept the belt. So we will see. You know, we all have a right to opine. You give your opinion, I give mine. But I'm standing firm behind my belief that those three reasons are the reasons why WWE kept the belt on Roman Reigns. Those three reasons, not just one, all three of them combined. And no, I'm not underselling Cody Rhodes. I admire Cody Rhodes, but I don't think he's the one to take that belt right now, April 2nd, 2023, from Roman Reigns.
All right, Reverend Keith, anything else about WrestleMania Night 2 that you'd like to bring up here tonight?
Okay, what I want to do, move on, Greg, is talk about Bianca Belair. She not only proved her mettle once again in a very good match against Asuka, but she showed tremendous representation by having those young ladies come out. I thought it was great. Can't wait to hear Wade disrespect her because he always puts down her entrances. But anyway, that was excellent. Those girls, the girls' club, that came out and danced and performed, and they also came back again in the backstage segment after the match when Kayla Braxton was talking to her. she's classy. She's a professional, and she was on this post show that I'm watching now. Triple H is talking, but she was the first guest on, and she was saying that not only does she want to be a role model for all the young ladies out there, but she wants to represent the African-American mm-hmm. race, people of color. And I thought that she did that very well tonight. Shout out to Bianca Belair. I tweeted it on Twitter, and that's what we need more of, representation. Her match was excellent. My third and final point of the night, and I'll bid you adieu, I thought that the triple threat match between Gunther, Sheamus, and Drew prior to the main event, in my opinion, was match of the night. I think the main event was match of the night, but prior to, I had that on my list as match of the night. Those three men brought it. It was, in the words of Big E, it was three big, meaty men slapping meat, and they beat the crap out of each other. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a great picture. There's a great picture. I think Sheamus posted it of like him and Drew both laying on the steps after coming through the curtain, like they were exhausted, and you know, absolutely, you could tell that it was just, they left it all out there. I mean, no doubt about it. It was a great match, and I think you're right. It was probably match of the night up to the main event, and I think you can probably quibble about the main event and the triple threat, probably depending on what kind of match you like. You know, I think they were both great in their own ways. I think if you're more about the drama and the storytelling, the main event was your match. I think if you're more about the hard hitting, the moves, the, you know, guys looking like they're trying to fight, I think the triple threat was probably the match you liked the most, or the match of the night. So I think it really probably comes down to taste and what your taste is in wrestling matches.
Yes. Yeah, it was good. And overall tonight, as you said yourself, and this is something we agree on. We don't agree on much. But what I can say, Greg Parks, is you said earlier tonight wasn't as emotional as last night, which it wasn't. Tonight had a lot of filler, but it was still a good ending for me. I know there are a lot of Cody Rhodes fans out there that's upset, but for me, it was a good ending. And I thought that it was a good show overall. And, you know, enjoy the rest of your night, Greg. Enjoy the rest of the callers. Thanks for taking my call, and I bid you adieu. Take care.
All right. Reverend Keith, we'll talk to you again soon. Really appreciate you being our first call here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. For those of you just joining us, I'm Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can find me here each and every Sunday night hosting Wrestling Night in America starting at 8 p.m. Eastern on pwtorchdailycast.com. I also write a full-page column every week in the Torch newsletter if you are a subscriber. And if not, you want to take advantage of WrestleMania season, pwtorch.com/goVIP is where you can go. Let's go to our next phone call. This is a 716 area code. Looks like David from Pennsylvania. David, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. Hello. Hello, David. Oh, I heard a rumble there. Hello, David.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Can you hear me? Yep. You're on,
yeah,
bud.
Yeah, hello. Yeah.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I want to talk about WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. What did you think of the show tonight?
I didn't watch it, but and I don't watch wrestling like I used to. We used to watch it a lot more back in the day with the Attitude Era with Austin, The Rock, DX, Angle, when Y2J came to WWE. That was the time I was really into it. Probably the last time I was really into it was when John Cena was the champ, probably when he took on CM Punk. That was probably over 10 years ago now. So I've been out of it for a long time. I don't know what they're trying to get into with this. It just seems like the business isn't the same what it used to be, and I think this is kind of like they're not I think they're running off a lot of fans by making decisions like this, and it's I don't watch it. I think a lot of people don't watch this because of something like this, and it's frustrating. And I just looked on social media and stuff, and it seems like the people who still watch WWE a lot are kind of outraged by it.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking specifically about the result of the main event, I assume?
Yeah, totally about the main event. Yeah, and I like your analogy too about you compared it to Belichick with the Patriots, and you know, you could almost compare it would. I'll make another analogy. It's the week of the Masters. I mean, this is like, you know, a young golfer losing to Tiger in his prime at Augusta, but he, you know, maybe he beats him down the road at you know, a U.S. Open or a smaller tour event. It's just not the same, man. I feel like if you're gonna beat Roman, you got to do it where it's the biggest stage of them all. And, you know, to me, having the whole bloodline lose, like, this faction, like, that's around there now. I mean, this would be kind of like back in the day, maybe having, like, I don't know, whatever the biggest WCW pay-per-view was, and having, like, Hogan lose and having Hall and Nash lose or something. So it's crazy, man.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point about WWE running off their fans. When they set up a story to be told, and how many times tonight did we get hit over the head with the idea of Cody Rhodes finishing the story? You know, the announcers talked about that all show. They talked about it ad nauseum in the main event, Cody Rhodes trying to finish his story. And really, it's not just Cody Rhodes finishing his story. It's the fans getting to go on that ride and finish the story with Cody Rhodes. And so many times in the past, WWE has pulled the rug out from under a babyface who's about to win the championship, who's about to reach that milestone that they've been working towards. And here again, they've done it with Cody Rhodes. Now, granted, it was a night after they successfully pulled the trigger with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens defeating the Usos. That's on an admittedly smaller scale than Cody Rhodes winning the championship in the main event of night two of WrestleMania and knocking off Roman Reigns, who's been champion for almost 3 years. But it seems to be symptomatic of WWE booking. And if you want to look at, there are a lot of reasons that fans have become non-fans of professional wrestling. You know, we've seen WWE lose fans over and over and over again. I mean, just anecdotally, like 10 years ago when I would be watching Raw and SmackDown and I'd be live tweeting, I mean, the interaction that you would get, it was off the charts. And now I'll live tweet Raw or SmackDown and have very little interaction. So that just may be, you know, difference in social media between now and then, but I think it is also speaking about the fan interest in watching these shows live. And so, you know, the fan interest has been down from the peak. You mentioned the Attitude Era, certainly there. And, you know, there are dozens of reasons why that's the case. One of them, I can almost guarantee you, is the fact that fans just got tired of WWE booking their baby faces so poorly. And yet here tonight, we have another case of fans going on a journey with Cody Rhodes from his return to WWE, working through the pectoral injury, coming back, winning the Royal Rumble, all roads leading to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. That was the moment. And yes, you can have Cody Rhodes win somewhere else, but it's not going to be the same. So, you know, part of it is all your perspective. Reverend Keith called in. His perspective was bloodline focused. The story the bloodline was telling, everything bloodline focused, that is the priority for WWE. That was the priority for Reverend Keith in how he was looking at this. On the other side, there are people and there are a lot of fans who look at it Cody Rhodes focused. He's the babyface. He's the person that WWE is trying to get fans invested in and his journey. And when you don't complete that journey, and, you know, WWE was leading us there all along by saying, finish the story, finish the story. When you don't complete that journey, that's going to sour a lot of fans, not on Cody Rhodes necessarily, but on WWE's booking, because we've been through this before. So I think that is the frustration that you're seeing play out a lot on social media, is, you know, part of it being just that being unable to finish the story, and there's no guarantee that Cody Rhodes will be as hot as he was tonight when you could have and probably should have pulled the trigger.
Yeah, no question about it, man. And I mean, you know, and I, like I said, I mean, I'm probably in that category of people that used to be like a much bigger wrestling fan. You know, I think the characters back in the day were definitely more over the top, obviously, like an Austin Even Cena for a long time. They definitely had more of a mainstream appeal. And I think, you know, the thing too that you have to wonder is, like, with the news coming out today, I don't know how this played into it, but a friend of mine was talking about this on a sports talk show today, was about the UFC and the WWE possibly going together, like in business being owned by the same company. You wonder if there's something they're setting up for that maybe down the road. I don't know. I would have no inside information about that. But that's just to wonder about that. But, ESPN is, like, talking about it right now. And to me, like, I feel like the coverage has never been bigger, but it's not the same. It's just not the same. Like, probably the biggest star, like, in the whole thing to me is the guy who doesn't even wrestle, and that's Paul Heyman. I mean, and then the other angle that and Heyman's an unbelievable talker. I mean, think of the things he's talked and BS'd about over the years. I mean, everything from Brock Lesnar to ECW. I mean, so that just shows how great of a, you know, character he is. But I think the other side to it, and I'll let you go on this point, is, like, I've seen a lot of commercials for Raw for tomorrow night, and I think of all the great Raws the night after WrestleMania, whether it's, speaking of Brock Lesnar, his debut in Montreal, DX in the night after WrestleMania 14 when they won that cage match. I think of, Enzo, or was his name Enzo and Cass, I think? Their debut on Raw. Just all these cool things, like the night after WrestleMania. Like in the last couple of years, and this maybe goes to your point, like, I think we've had anything like that. Nothing great. Like, it seems like the night after WrestleMania, you got to make it. Like, even I remember, who was the guy from Switzerland? I think he went, he tried to team up with Heyman. And he turned on, yes. They were going to put him over as, like, a Paul Heyman guy. And, that was a Raw after WrestleMania. So, like, I feel like there's gotta be something huge tomorrow night. Like, because, like, to me, like, they've been promoting this, like, Raw after WrestleMania, and the old time fan in me says, damn, you got to do something big here or you're going to lose even more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what people are looking for. The Raw after WrestleMania had traditionally been a really strong night, but like you said, the last few years just hasn't been that way. So, we'll see, you know, things may be up in the air with this potential sale to Endeavor, which according to reports could happen as early as tomorrow. So, you never really know if that's going to put kind of the brakes on any major booking changes going forward, but I guess we'll have to see. Tune in tomorrow night on Raw to see. David, thanks for calling tonight. Really good hearing your perspective on this.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks again, Greg, and have a good night, man.
Thanks, you too. All right, we're going to go to a live perspective on this. We had Marcus, PWTorch.com contributor Marcus Arias, who called in last night after night one. We're going to go to him now for his perspective on night two. Marcus, are you there?
I am, Greg. Good evening and happy WrestleMania night.
Happy WrestleMania night two, for sure. My questions begin and end with the main event. It was,
yes, sir.
It seemed to be a very hot reaction throughout. First question, though, what was the percentage-wise for Reigns and Rhodes? I mean, was it complete heel reaction for Reigns, complete babyface reaction for Rhodes, or was it, you know, 80-20, 70-30? How would you define the split in the reaction that these two got in the main event tonight?
Oh, boy. I would say 60-40, probably in Cody's favor, but not by much. My section was fairly anti-Cody. But just kind of hearing around, you know, there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of let's go Cody, Cody sucks, chants going on. When everything was said and done, and, you know, a lot of people had their fingers in the air, so that, you know, Roman definitely had his supporters tonight. So I would say, yeah, probably 60-40.
So what was the reaction to the finish? I think most people were expecting a Cody Rhodes victory here. And even for the fans who were probably pro Roman Reigns, you know, when you get into a live crowd, it's more about the moments. So that's why heels get cheered when titles change, when the heels win the title.
Yep.
So even people who like Roman Reigns probably would have cheered the moment of Cody Rhodes winning and were maybe even looking forward to that. Describe the reaction of the crowd in the building upon the finish of the match, and then just the general mood as people were exiting SoFi Stadium tonight.
So I was one that thought Cody was winning tonight. I definitely had that vibe going in. And I honestly thought he was going to pull it out, and then didn't happen. And just kind of watching and kind of gauging everyone's reactions, a lot of people were deflated, especially watching as the show went off the air and Cody was in the ring with his music playing, just kind of looking kind of disappointed. The crowd was right there with him, walking out of SoFi, talking with some people and just watching. A lot of people were upset about that.
Talking more generally about WrestleMania, how would you compare – the quality of WrestleMania Night 1 to the quality of WrestleMania Night 2?
So I think the best way to think about it is WrestleMania Night 1 had the, you know, if we're looking at sports entertainment, WrestleMania Night 1 had the entertainment focused, you know, with the Logan Paul matches and the Snoop Dogg and Pat McAfee and you know, had the celebrity moments. This was more of the sports side of sports entertainment. You know, the matches, you know, for what I like in my pro wrestling, I was definitely geared more towards Night 2, which it kind of seemed to have more of a focus on, you know, the quote-unquote, you know, work rate matches. But they definitely seem more inclined that way tonight.
Did the fans seem to know what happened when Shane McMahon got hurt? And what was the reaction to that and the audible called by WWE with Snoop Dogg?
I don't think anyone really knew what was going on. There were a couple people kind of asking, like what happened to Shane? Where did he go? You know, it sounds like now he tore his quad, which, gosh, that's a horrible injury. But if they made the call to call the audible on that, then good for them. They took a what could have been a negative moment and found a way to still kind of entertain everybody. And it ended up being, you know, all things considered, a fairly fun moment and genuine surprise. I was not expecting that music.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was. That was definitely a surprise for the ages, maybe even. The opening match, Brock Lesnar and Omos, sounded like the crowd was pretty interested in it, even though it's Omos and, you know, yeah, his limitations are pretty well known. Was the crowd as strong for this match as it seemed to come across on TV?
I think so. This was... you know, we were talking about percentage-wise. This was all Brock. This was all Brock tonight, which kind of interesting for me to hear. I'm not used to seeing Brock in that light. I'm really not used to seeing him play babyface in peril. You know, there were a couple spots where he was, you know, kind of getting manhandled by Omos, and that was interesting. And I think, you know, I never thought I'd say this, but I think there was some sympathy building up on Brock Lesnar, which definitely shifted fans towards in his direction, and that was bizarre, but it was pretty fun. And I think the match did what it was supposed to do. You know, it was never going to be a technical masterpiece, but it was entertaining.
For sure. Anything else that you want to mention about WrestleMania Night 2, Marcus, that maybe I didn't ask you, or anything that stood out to you from a live perspective that you want to bring up here?
You know, the crowd was a lot more into this night as a whole, which kind of added an extra layer of enjoyment, just having this many people really engaged in the product, which was really awesome. I got to meet PW Torch contributor Frank Pattiani, which was fantastic today. So, Frank, if you're listening, man, it was great to meet you. So that was probably, you know, the highlight of my evening. and it was just, you know, this whole, you know, weekend, you know, I've done three big shows in 3 days, and I am beyond tired. But, man, I wouldn't change anything. This was a fantastic weekend and a great bunch of shows.
Awesome. Well, Marcus, I appreciate you being our on-site correspondent here for WrestleMania both nights, and I really appreciate you taking the time to call in afterward.
Anytime, Greg. Thank you for having me, guys, and check out the rest of the content and go VIP.
Absolutely. Marcus Arias there, and you can hear him. He'll be a co-host again here soon here on Wrestling Night in America, so we enjoy talking to him here. I have an email we want to get to. This is Jake from Christchurch, New Zealand. He says, "Hi, Greg. First time listening to your show, and I've enjoyed your nightly perspectives of WrestleMania. As a New Zealander, it's been great to see Dakota Kai on a WrestleMania card, but I do worry where she can go from here. Damage Control has missed the mark for the majority of its run. There doesn't seem to be any chemistry at all between the trio, and I think Bailey, who I like a lot, has struggled since returning from her serious long-term injury. I thought the six-woman tag match was lackluster, even though I wanted to like it for the sake of my countrywoman. Do you think Damage Control can be revived, or should they cut their losses after the night one loss to two retired legends and Becky Lynch?" Yeah, when you phrase it that way, which is not inaccurate to say that they lost to Becky Lynch and two legends, you know, retired legends, basically, it does make you wonder what's next. We did see a tweet from Bailey today that said, "And sometimes the most romantic love story comes to an end. Bye." So a lot of people are taking that to mean she may be finishing up in WWE. She may be done in WWE, or maybe Damage Control is done. So I think tomorrow night on Raw is going to be big, if that is in fact the case. It's going to be big for Io Sky and Dakota Kai to see what they do next. I mean, you could conceivably keep them in a tag team together. You could do the route that NXT did when Mandy Rose was released with Toxic Attraction and have them feud. But I think Io Sky and Dakota Kai are too talented to simply get lost in the shuffle. So I do hope that there is something for them to do. You know, Damage Control just in my mind hasn't worked. And I think, you know, Jacob brought up just the lack of chemistry, Bailey not being the same in the ring as before her injury, have all kind of conspired to, you know, the booking absolutely is part of it too. But all three of those things have conspired to really not make Damage Control the top level group that it could have been when it was first formed at SummerSlam. So I think this is a good moment, if they are going to stay together, to kind of go back to the drawing board and say, okay, what do we need to do? How can we fix this? How can we adjust on the fly here to make this a more compelling group? Because you do have three pieces that are very valuable and three pieces that are high quality pieces in the women's division. So I think it's, again, if they are going to be staying together moving forward, and that tweet by Bailey was about something else, I think now after WrestleMania, when there's somewhat of a reset and, you know, they did lose the way they did, it's time to figure out, okay, what do we want this group to be? What's the mission statement? What are they out to prove? So I hope that comes as early as tomorrow night on Raw, if in fact that does happen. So let's go back to the phones here. It is the 202 area code. I believe this is Chris from D.C. Chris, you're on Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm great. I'm exhausted, probably not as much as you are.
Yeah.
And I just want to say thanks for taking my call. And I'm a big fan of the work you do, even though you're from Western New York and you're a Jags fan, which we covered last time we talked, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
I think, you know, objectively, I think night one was, at least to me, I think it was a lot better than night two, just in terms of like the totality. If I'm looking at it like I look at a great album, right? If I'm looking at it like,
sure,
you know, like the Sgt. Peppers. But with that said, a lot of big moments tonight. I do want to – I'm here to do the run-in. I'm 100% with you on the main event. And while I agree with the good Reverend in terms of the entrance for Bianca and the black representation, I'm all about that. I think that is wonderful, and it should be featured more. But I couldn't disagree with him more about the main event. In fact, I think if you're going to pin your argument on, you know, why Roman should have won, strictly on, at least from what I heard, strictly on the fact that, well, it's 1,000 days, Greg, just, you know, watch, you know, wait for the story. He's not going to have the title as long as Bruno did, right? I mean, that's nearly impossible. He's not going to have a 10-year reign. This was the time to strike, and in my opinion, they fumbled the ball. And yes, of course, there's future events. We could book, you know, till we're blue in the face. Oh, they could keep the story going somehow until SummerSlam or something, or Survivor Series, whatever the next big event is, maybe even Backlash. But it's never going to – Cody is never going to be as hot as he is right this second. In fact, I would say, as somebody who watched AEW almost exclusively until probably last year, exceeded expectations. You know, I don't think it was a guarantee. Yeah. He gets that big pop when he comes back last year. I don't know what the reaction in the back was, but you know, incredible pop. He had a hero's welcome. He has that before that injury, and he has that incredible Hell in the Cell. He managed to keep that momentum despite being hurt. WWE did everything right with how last night ended, right? I mean, they managed to take one story and split it into two main events, which is masterful, and they literally fumbled the ball at the goal line. And it's never going to mean as much as it does, as it would have tonight. The only thing, and I don't know if you were with me with this, the only thing I was waiting for that I thought might save it is when they stopped at the end of the ramp. I thought maybe, I was holding out hope, maybe The Rock was going to come out and maybe they would, like, maybe I was holding out hope, like, well, maybe he'll come out and, like, that would have saved it. Like, somehow, to me, like, it would have been a detriment to Cody, but maybe they do, like, a Cena-Rock thing where they book it a year in advance. But yeah, I'm super disappointed. And whatever, if he wins, he could win tomorrow on Raw, and it's not going to mean as much. I don't know what you can say that you haven't already said, but I'm in the same boat as you are.
and I think it's important to remember that, you know, Roman losing is not the end of the Bloodline storyline. You know, that doesn't make the Bloodline storyline cease to exist. In fact, I would argue it gives many more different and more interesting options of a story to tell than Roman winning, even with the Usos losing. And I get that the Usos losing opens up another layer to the story, and it opens up more ways that it can go, but so too does Roman losing. You know what I'm saying? So,
of course, yeah.
I don't buy that as an excuse, because it's the same. Roman winning and the Usos losing, yes, opens up different storyline possibilities. Roman losing and the Usos does the exact same thing. So to me, it's not like, oh, you had to do this one, because they both open up various storytelling opportunities. So, yeah, it's just, I think, you know, it's, I am curious, absolutely, now, okay, you know, when and to whom does Reigns ultimately lose to? Because part of what Reverend Keith was saying, too, is, you know, he doesn't necessarily need to lose it to Cody Rhodes. Okay, you know, but it's not like WWE is brimming with top babyfaces who are just absolutely chomping at the bit to take on Roman Reigns. You know, part of when you have this kind of streak that Roman Reigns has been on, you're ultimately sacrificing a lot of top babyfaces to him in order to get him to this point. And I think for a lot of that, it's been worth it. You know, the Daniel Bryans, the Cesaros, you can name a lot of the wrestlers who have been fed to Roman Reigns to get him to this point, and you can probably say, yeah, ultimately it was worth it. But at some point, you're reaching the law of diminishing returns, where each Roman Reigns win, especially the way he won, right? With the Solo Sikoa interference and the Paul Heyman distraction. And, you know, it's people will accept that to a certain level. And there's a point where people aren't going to accept those kind of results anymore. And you, when you're WWE and you've been going for as long as they have with this storyline, you run the risk of reaching that point. And I think for some people, tonight was that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just off the top of my head, like I was listening to you, you talked about the other things that could have happened had Roman lost. Top of my head, here's a great idea. Why not revisit Jay and Roman and have a feud there, right? Like they all lose the titles. The bloodline is in turmoil. You know, it's Roman and Solo, and then it's the Usos. You could book months of TV off of that, right? And at least in my opinion, and it would be compelling, you know? And this time it would be in front of fans, because unfortunately when they did all a lot of that, if I recall correctly, it was, you know, in the height of the pandemic. And in terms of the baby faces, when I was, you know, who could take it off of him next, when I was thinking, when I was listening to the previous callers and your correspondent, I can't think of one person. You know, it's wrestling, so you can always build somebody up, but not organically. You know, that reaction that Cody got when he came back, again, it surprised me. It really did, especially with the reactions he was getting in AEW. And I get that they're different audiences. You know, there's some overlap. It is different. And, you know, he was about as hot as you could ask for, from the small towns to the big cities. And I think it was a missed opportunity. I'm trying to think the other thing I wanted to say. Oh, with the women's, both the women's matches, two other quick things, and then I'll let you go. Both women's matches, I think all four performers are excellent. I was telling one of my buddies about night one, if it's okay to talk about night one. The commentators reporting over how Charlotte is an all-time great. And I'm sitting there going, like, yeah, she's really good, but, like, is she an all-time great? And then I realize, like, and they're going over accolades, and I go, oh, yeah, I'm getting old because I remember her when she was in NXT. That's what it means. Yes, she's been doing this a long time, and it means I'm an old man now. So that was interesting. Uh-huh. And, you know, Rhea is, you know, incredibly believable, strong, powerful. I think that was the right move. The other women's match, I wanted to see, just from like a personal aspect, I wanted to see Asuka go over, but I can't complain about that. I mean, you know, Bianca is incredible athlete. She seems like, by all accounts, a great human being, you know, a great role model for young girls. So, you know, I can't be mad at that. The last thing I wanted to say, and maybe get your reaction, I want to take a second and give flowers to the commentators, to Cole and Corey Graves. I thought, especially during the Ray and Dominic match, that was like where I noticed it the most. But they did a great job doing what I grew up on, which was, you know, a true babyface commentator and a true heel commentator. And you might say, well, that's obvious, but like, I feel like that's been missing in wrestling, not just WWE. I think they did an excellent job, like giving a canvas for the stories. And people, you know, Cole has been a polarizing figure. Him without Vince in his ear has just been like night and day. And I just want to take a minute to give them some recognition. They did an excellent job for two nights in a row, by the way, which like 4 hours, two nights. So I just want to get your reaction to that, and then I'll hang up.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, the best job announcers do is sometimes when you don't notice them. And, you know, because if there's one thing Twitter likes to do is to pick apart announcers, you know, for rightly or wrongly, you know, because, and JR gets it on AEW a lot. But I think Michael Cole has really settled into that voice of WWE role, and Corey Graves compliments him very nicely. And I think they did do a nice job. The only thing that I wasn't sure about, it was the laughing and the snickering during the triple threat. Like, when you're trying to sell that these guys are out there beating the tar out of each other, I'm not sure that it helps sell that with the announcers laughing on commentary. And, you know, I don't think it was laughing to make fun of what was going on or to make light of what was going on. It was laughing. It's almost like, oh, my God, like, that's how hard he hit them. And it's kind of, like,
yeah,
hard to keep it in. But I'm that would be my only question is, like, I think they undersold it. I don't know that that was the right tact to take on commentary with that. I think there could have been a different way to sell the brutality of that match other than laughing. But otherwise, yes. I mean, for over two nights, you know, what was it, 8 hours total or something like that, they did a fantastic job for the most part hitting the right notes emotionally, because a lot of these matches were emotionally tinged, and they – you know, you rely on the announcers to hit the right notes during those matches, so you as a viewer feel the way that WWE booking wants you to feel during the process of that match. And I think they did a really nice job with that.
I do too, and that's a fair criticism. I will say though, when for maybe we're just as bad, but when my buddies and I watch like UFC, you know, sometimes it's like a uncomfortable reaction, laughter, like,
yeah,
like I just got knocked out, I'm laughing, but like I don't mean it's,
yeah,
funny, I just mean, but fair criticism. Greg, you're the man. Keep up the good work, and I'll hang up now.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate your phone call here tonight. So it is, for those who are maybe listening on delay, it is 12:50 a.m. on the East Coast, and we have five more callers to get through, and you know me. I like to give everybody an opportunity who's on hold. So in order to get through these in a reasonable amount of time, with me having to go and teach middle schoolers tomorrow morning, who, if anyone knows anything about middle schoolers, they are bloodthirsty, and you cannot show weakness. And that includes – it's like a classroom full of Vince McMahons. You can't yawn in front of them. They will smell your weakness. So I would appreciate people keeping their comments and questions as short as possible, while also, I appreciate everyone taking the time to call in, because I know it's late for you guys as well. Let's go to a live correspondent, and this is Marcus. We had Marcus early on representing the Torch family. We've got Frank now, Frank Pettiani, who actually helped me preview WrestleMania a couple weeks ago here on Wrestling Night in America. Frank was able to be at Night 2 Live. Frank, thanks for calling in. Really appreciate it, and really looking forward to getting your live perspective on Night 2.
Hey, Greg, how you doing? And let me say, I had the honor of meeting both Marcus and Zach Adorn tonight. It was a great night, you know, to meet those guys and talk to those guys, you know, during and before the show. So I want to give a shout out to them, and really had a good time overall, you know, being at the show live tonight.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, I'll ask you the same question to start off that I asked Marcus, is kind of like, you know, what was your reaction to the main event finish with Roman Reigns retaining?
Yeah, I was in shock. Not total shock. Like, I kind of, you know, like we talked about last week, you know, like, I expected Cody to win, but I wasn't totally sure about that. So I wasn't like, oh, my God, what did they do? But I guess personally, I wanted to see Cody win. I felt like it was time. I felt like the story was there, you know, given, you know, that he had been hurt, came back, won the Rumble. You know, mentioned after WrestleMania last year that he wanted to win the title that, you know, his dad never won and everything like that. So I guess on a personal level, I wanted to see him do it. And, you know, being there, it would have been a great moment, you know, to see it happen. But, you know, just reading the Twitter reaction and reading what some, you know, people from the Torch, respected people, had to say, you know, I could kind of see from a business standpoint what they did. I just hope, I guess WWE knows what they're doing if they're making the kind of money they're making, Greg, right? I mean, they're not stupid if they're getting sold to Endeavor for millions of dollars. So I guess they know what they're doing on some kind of level. You know what I mean? So it's one of those it's a very mixed feeling right now, if that makes any sense. You know, I get it. I get it from a business standpoint, from a personal standpoint, being there. I guess I wanted to see something different.
So speaking of being there, talk a little bit about the atmosphere of being there in you know, the midst of 60,000, 70,000 people for WrestleMania. I don't know I think you said you've been to WrestleMania before. So how does this compare to previous shows you've been at?
So I have not been to WrestleMania. I was at Survivor Series 2018 out here in L.A., and I spoke to you that night. Much different vibe from that show. Honestly, comparing Survivor Series 2018 to this show, much different. I mean, Survivor Series 2018 felt like a Raw on steroids. Okay, that's pretty much what it felt like. This felt different. And, you know, a lot of that, Greg, has to do with the, you know, the stage and the setup. You know, they had the thing, like, they had the board, like, surrounding the ring high above where they had the screens and everything like that. They had, you know, the entrances. That, I mean, you saw it on TV. It's not anything, you know, I didn't see anything different that you didn't see on TV. But they had, like, a rotating, like, they had different screens of the different wrestlers, and they had, like, you know, different, like, posters from, you know what I mean, like, from different movies and everything. Like, they had one for L.A. Knight. They had one for Alexa Bliss. They had one for, you know, Fury and everything like that. I'm not the biggest movie buff, so I couldn't tell you, like, but, like, Alexa Bliss, I think her thing was Pretty Woman. You know what I mean? Like, that was one thing I picked up on. Yeah, but so that was cool to see on a rotating basis. So, you know, it felt special. It felt like you were at something different. You know, I mean, I've been to Raws, I've been to SmackDowns, I've been to Dynamite. I'll be at this Wednesday's Dynamite. I know I'm not going to be, you know, this Wednesday won't feel anything like tonight. You know, it's definitely the way WWE presents their big events. You know, you're at something special when you're in the building, especially for something like WrestleMania, if that makes any sense.
I feel like the visuals could kind of be overwhelming to some people there at WrestleMania, because even watching at home, it was a lot to sit back and take in when you got the wide shot of the stadium. Like, if you were someone who has, like, you know, ADD or something like that, it probably hard to pay attention to what's going on in the ring when there's so much, you know, visual, you know, this visually going on, that it's probably hard to keep your attention in one place.
I
visual stimulation is what I was going for.
I am a victim of that. So I'll be very honest with you. I get distracted easily. Okay. And, like, so I'm watching it, and I'm like, all right, let me watch it in the ring. Well, I'm a little far up. I'm in section 340. Let me watch it on the big screen. Okay, I'm watching it on the big screen. Well, I should be watching in the ring. So I'm, like, going back and forth, and then I'm looking around, and I'm like, I'm texting my friends, and, like, I was messaging Wade. I was sending him tidbits. You know what I mean? So I was like, I'm all over the place. And to be quite honest, like, I missed two key spots. Like, I totally missed what happened with Shane. You know, next thing I know, he's being, you know, carried out, and I'm like, wait a minute, what the hell happened? You know what I mean? Like, that's something that I should have seen, and I totally missed it. And then the blood spot with Balor, you know, I guess he got hit by a ladder or something like that, and they had to stop things for a minute, and I totally missed that. But, like, I got caught up in the atmosphere, you know, not having been to something like this before. You know, I'm checking it out. I'm looking around. I'm looking, you know, I'm talking to this guy next to me that I, you know, became friendly with. And this and that. So, yeah, you know, what you're saying is absolutely fair, and it could cause you to miss, you know, key spots. And it was two key spots that I totally, you know, I totally swung and missed on. And I feel kind of embarrassed that I did.
What was the makeup of the crowd like in terms of, you know, age levels? Was it mostly families? Was there a lot of young guys there? What did you sense was the crowd makeup there tonight?
I sensed a mix, to be quite honest. Like, I saw several, like, I saw kids in my section. So I think it was, you know, a family-like atmosphere. Like, it wasn't, I sensed last night was a little more rabid, you know, with it being the first night and everything like that. And I think, you know, there were a lot more, you know, hot matches last night. Tonight felt like they were into it, but I didn't feel like they were as into it as they were last night. And as far as the people, yeah, I sensed a mix. Like, I saw, you know, like I said, I saw kids, you know, I saw a mixture of different types, you know, friends, you know, together and everything, you know, families, you know, but it would be hard for me to put, like, a percentage on, you know, what was families, what was friends, what was, you know, that kind of thing. So, but definitely a mixture of a lot.
So last question for you tonight. How did this show feel for you in comparison? I know you weren't there for night one last night, but what was the quality of the show like being there live?
The quality, I'll tell you this, the quality last night was a lot better. You know what I mean? Like, if you, in hindsight now, if you told me, hey, Frank, what night would you have rather have been at? I would have rather have been at last night. You know, like, I'm not saying that they weren't into what was going on last night, or excuse me, tonight. You know, like, they definitely, they were into pretty much most of the matches. I couldn't tell you about the women's showcase because I was up getting shirts. You know, I do have to be a good dad and a husband at some point, so I got to pick my spot for that.
Of course.
I mean, they were into everything. And one thing that I found interesting as an overall theme, I felt like the crowd was just more into moments. And I sense that in particular. Yeah. I don't know if you've talked about this with the Bianca and Asuka match, but, like, I feel like they would have been into Asuka winning, but they were into Bianca winning just as well. You know what I mean? Like, as long as they got that moment, they were fine. So that, and that's what I sense overall from this current WWE audience. As long as they get something, they're happy.
Yeah, I think, you know, we did kind of touch on that, not with the Bianca-Asuka match, but it is the way that, and I think it's partly because WWE has trained the fans to react that way, and that's why you see heels get cheered when they win titles. It's not because the fans like that heel, it's because they're acknowledging that they saw a moment, they were there live for a title change, and they're cheering that part of it. So I think that is how fans have been trained by WWE to react, and that it's not about wins and losses, it's about moments. You know, people don't go to WrestleMania to win a match, they go to WrestleMania to have a WrestleMania moment. And so that's the verbiage WWE has used. And so I think that fans pick up on that over time. And that's how we get to where we are with things like that. But, Frank, I'm going to let you go. Really appreciate you taking the time to call in here tonight and give your live perspective. And you can now say you've been to WrestleMania live.
Yes, absolutely. I can check off that box, go get some other callers. And, Greg, for God's sakes, get some sleep tonight, would you?
I'll try, Frank. Thanks so much for calling in again.
You got it, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Frank Petty, NEPWTorch.com contributor, calling in here tonight. A couple more calls to get to. Let's go to the 305 area code. It's DJ from Miami. DJ, along with Rep. Keith, one of our callers from both nights of WrestleMania. DJ, welcome to the show. Good to have you on. What did you think of WrestleMania Night 2?
It was okay. I thought WrestleMania was better the first night, but I guess we can talk about what do you want to talk about. I guess we're going to talk about this. Let's go into Reverence Keith's little thing. Guess what? He never mentioned that, oh boy, guess what? He broke which move? That the move he's beat everybody before. You know, he broke that move. Nobody's ever broke that move. Cody did it. There's so much stuff. Roman should have never called that match. Cody should have definitely called that match. Going into this, yes, they dropped the ball. I'm scared Mr. Dashing over there is going to lose his steam by SummerSlam, or I don't know. Remember what I said last couple weeks ago? When he did that match with Gunther's guy, it was long and clunky, and it was like, ugh. I thought today was boom, boom, boom. Like, I thought it was going to do with that guy. You know, I thought how he was talking, he talked all this game. It was a long, clunky-ish match, a little, it was a little too much, a little, you know, here and there, you know, I don't know. It had to be Vince's doing, I don't know. But going into this at the end of the day, I really think Cody could lose steam, seriously, before, you know, SummerSlam or, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I've brought up and other callers have brought up, that not necessarily that Cody's going to lose steam, but that he may not be as hot as he is tonight. And if you want to pull the trigger on him, and we don't know. I mean, Cody might not be the guy. WWE may not see him as the guy to beat Roman. So if that's the case, I guess we don't really have to worry about Cody losing steam. But I think if you're WWE and you eventually want to get that title onto Cody, but now wasn't the moment for whatever reason, I do think you have to worry about him potentially losing steam. Now, he obviously has the out of losing due to interference from Solo Sikoa. So he does have that out. But, you know, I think that promo that he cuts, whether it's tomorrow night, whether it's on SmackDown, it's going to be a really important promo, and it's going to be really interesting to see how the crowd sticks with him. Because if he is the guy that WWE eventually wants to take the title off Roman, they have to walk a very fine line in how he's presented and how he talks about that loss and what he's going to do about it. What is his mission statement now? So it is going to be kind of interesting to see where they go with him and how they keep him hot if, in fact, he's going to be the guy eventually, whether it's a Backlash, wherever it is, to take the belt off Roman.
Let me ask you this before I go to the next question. Do you think, like I was saying yesterday, now he needs Owens and Sammy now as a trio now to help him go until SummerSlam? Or do you think he's going to do this on his own? I mean, I don't want him wrestling like little gimmick people and then going into WrestleMania, SummerSlam again. I don't know. I'm just confused.
I think he could, you know, the involvement of Sammy and Kevin in his match tonight, you know, he could call upon them to sort of even the odds. Again, I don't think, and it's the same, you know, thing I said last night, I don't think it's going to be any kind of permanent stable, but it could be a short-term, you know, business deal, so to speak, you know, with Cody acknowledging that, hey, when I fight Roman, I'm fighting the entire bloodline. So I need some backup. I need some guys who I can trust, who I've – and, you know, they have the history because Cody is the one that really was the impetus for these two to get back together. So he could, you know, call in that chip, call in that favor maybe, and say, hey, guys, I need you to watch my back. So, again, I don't think it's going to be any long-term thing. I think it would just be for the next match, but I think it's a possibility.
I'm just very confused where they're going to go. This is going to be crazy. I mean, I just hope – I don't – do you think – let me ask you one weird question. Do you think that Roman was going to do something and then he decided to stay? Do you think that you feel like it wasn't right? I don't – just – something was there that wasn't right.
In terms of what?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It was just weird. It was just – something was there, like how they told the story, like it was guaranteed he was going to win. He broke the move nobody could do. He, you know, he got him on the table, cement, you know, broke the table. Everything was perfect. Then it was just the weirdest thing. It was just like, feel like, okay, it was just swerving like the guy was saying a couple weeks ago. And then boom, it was just the weirdest thing. Maybe they had other plans, like, you know, they've done this before, you know, I don't know. It was just a little strange.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah,
going
into
our
next game,
I don't know, you know.
Yeah, go ahead.
What do you think, though?
Go ahead with your second.
Going into Monday, do you think he'll have a little promo, or do you think it's going to be a big thing?
Cody?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I think there does need to be some kind of explanation. And, you know, he does have the history with Solo. You know, he told Solo on Monday, you're not ready. And I think Solo, you know, that angered him. And that may have played a part in what he did tonight at WrestleMania. So I do wonder what part that's going to play in it as well. But absolutely, if we don't hear from him on Raw, we'll hear from him on SmackDown. You know, you need to reset the mission statement and see where he is going forward. So, yeah, I think we'll certainly hear from him.
Going to my next question, talk about another babyface that We'll switch gears really fast. I'm kind of confused, and I watched it again, but Jungle Boy, I don't know what was up with him, and I don't know why Matt's still there, but when he did his promo after, he was fired up. Like, I never saw him really talk like that before, and I liked it. But what's kind of strange is, like, more and more stuff is getting out. You know, he's dating Anna Jay. Anna Jay is a heel. I'm confused on that. I'd rather him be with Anna Jay compared to people knowing that she's a heel and he's a huge face, and we don't know if he's going to win this title or not. I mean, I'm just confused, like, another baby face, are they going to screw this guy over too? I don't know. It's like the Cody Rhodes all over. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think what you're seeing is really the beginning, and, you know, dating back to his win over Christian Cage at the pay-per-view, you know, I think they're trying to present him as a more serious babyface because they do want him eventually to be a main event level guy to challenge for a world title. I don't know if that's going to be anytime soon or if that's still sometime down the road, but it never hurts to start, you know, building that babyface to get that challenge. And I think MJF is probably going to be around for a while. So they're really playing that card and setting the stage for whenever it is that he challenges MJF.
Do you think that Anna Jay should switch from heel to face and be with him?
Well, it depends. I mean, if it's more than just a throwaway line than it was, then yeah, she should. But if it's just kind of a throwaway line used in a promo like it was so far, I don't think it's really necessary.
I had to ask. And my last thing is, the Bray Wyatt thing, nobody said anything. It was quiet. It was dead. Bobby came out with the Brock thing. I don't know. He should have stayed fired. He should have went to ECW. I don't know. What do you really think at the end of the day? You know, Braun Strowman is doing something with this other guy, and Bray's, I'm just confused where they're going to do with him, and he doesn't really fit in. Nobody mentioned anything about him.
Well, the word is that he's battling some kind of illness, which is why you didn't see him, and which is why the build-up with Bobby Lashley went nowhere. So, you know, I don't think it's as simple as, you know, oh, there were creative differences, or, oh, he should have done that, or he should have done this. You know, if it is legit, if that's why he's not been on TV, if that's why he and Lashley didn't tangle at WrestleMania like the original plan was, then, I mean, it's really hard to fault him for that.
Yeah, I was just wondering because they didn't mention him once, so I was curious, like, what they, you know, no symbols or nothing, so I was just curious, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Understandable. DJ, look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Thanks.
Yep. All right, got a couple more phone calls to get to. I'll promise to try to get through them quickly. The 978 area code, 978, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Spencer from Massachusetts.
Hi, Spencer. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What'd you think of WrestleMania Night 2?
I thought it was pretty good. I was really into the main event. I didn't think I would be, kind of during the whole first half of it. And then it kind of just got, I don't know, it kind of got ruined by the same problem I have with the Roman Reigns matches lately, where it's just a cartoonish level of interference in all of his matches. Like, it seems like every single match, like, it feels like a huge deal every time Roman Reigns fights. Like, they do a big build-up, big entrance, and it's supposed to have that kind of, like, classic match feel. And then, like, I don't know, his whole faction gets to come in at some point and, like, do their finishers with, like, no, like, what does it take to get disqualified in a WWE match these days? Like, wasn't Solo ejected at one point? So, like, the rule is you can come back, but as long as you, like, wear a hoodie to disguise yourself, and then you can... And then, like, he was standing right next to Reigns after. He didn't even, like, sneak out. I don't know. It just kind of, like, ruins the feel. Like, because they want to have a big match feel, and then that always kind of just leaves me feeling like, I don't know. And they just, like, keep doing it, which is strange. And it's –
Yeah, I think part of that is – Spencer, I think part of that is, too, just the way that they're booking Roman Reigns as a heel is – You know, this is a guy who, yes, he's a dominating champion. Yes, he's been champion for 300 or 900 and however many days, but he needs help to do it. And he's a guy who will talk about how dominant he is, but when it comes down to it, he always needs help to win. And who's he getting help from? He's getting help from the rest of the bloodline. And that could play a role at some point. You know, once Jay or Jimmy get tired of doing Roman's bidding, you know, that could be a storyline point that they could say, hey, you know, you wouldn't be where you are without us. We've been bailing you out in title match after title match. So if they're eventually setting the table for that, and I think there is something there worth revisiting with Jay and Roman, because Jay was the first one that he had to make fall in line, right, physically. And so if you wanted to revisit that at some point, that's a storyline point that you could bring up. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do it against every Tom, Dick, and Harry that Roman Reigns fights and have to save him from every fight, but that does seem to be the tax WWE is taking with this.
And what's kind of weird about it, too, is, I don't know, he doesn't really carry himself that way. As, like, he carries himself as, like, I'm going to smash everybody. And, I don't know, nobody even kind of brings up, even Michael Cole, after, like, they'll be like, oh, he's cheating. But then when the match is over, he's like, oh, we have to acknowledge him for this great accomplishment. Like, didn't he just cheat,
yeah,
like, harder than I've ever seen anyone cheat ever in a wrestling? Like, when's the last time there was that much interference in a WrestleMania match? Like, ever.
Yeah, that is symptomatic of announcers in general, though. Like, any time there is cheating, it's like, oh, you know, he was so, you know, What a performance by such and such, and, you know, he cheated to win. And Wade will bring this up a lot on his reports, is you don't get heat on the heels by not pointing out, hey, what they did was unfair and it was illegal and this babyface should be upset. Instead, they're saying, well, he was smart to do it this way. And so I think that's just a general criticism of wrestling announcing across the board, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, even from a kayfabe, like, isn't Adam Pearce supposed to be, like, a face general manager? Like, I feel like even when Edge, back in his heyday, cheated a lot, like, somebody would at least make a cage match at some point so nobody could interfere.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. So I just thought that was kind of weird. But anyway, that was my only thought. Thanks for staying up, and I'll let you get to other callers.
All right. Thank you, Spencer. Appreciate the phone call and your perspective on the main event there. 914, you are next. 914, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Brad in Florida. I know you got to teach the kids in the morning, and I will be as quick as possible. Listen, man, I can't believe the hysterics that are going on over this outcome. And I'm not saying you. I'm just saying in general, reading things online, seeing people hysterical about how could this happen. This was the time. This was the only time. As if no one else loses. Solo just lost. Is his career over? No. Seth Rollins lost three times to Cody. Is his career over? No. I mean, this is really crazy. I mean, I've been saying for weeks, and I've been calling Wade's show, Cody entering 30 at Royal Rumble was no accident. There was not nearly enough adversity for him to climb that mountain and make this championship win something that was really, you really felt like, I understand this would have been a really cool moment. Yeah, it would have been really cool. It would have been really cool if Drew won at Clash of the Castle. It would have been really cool if Sheamus won at Clash of the Castle. There would have been plenty of really cool moments that you could do. But this is actually perfect, in my opinion. The reason why I think it's perfect, you're now going to have a Cody Rhodes who's going to go out there and clearly, by getting completely screwed, is going to have to ask for his rematch, and Roman's going to be a complete monster and not allow it. It's going to force Cody to get in Money in the Bank, win it, and then challenge for his championship at SummerSlam like a babyface. He's not going to cash in, you know, when Roman's limping after some match. He's going to call the match, and he's going to cash in on it. And, you know, I just don't understand how people have no patience to wait for this thing to happen in the right way rather than, I mean, what did Cody really do? Yes, he's a great guy. He's very popular. He's very likable. What did he really do, Greg? I mean, he came in, he had three matches with Seth Rollins, tore his pec, great. It was very a wonderful performance. I really liked the guy. But what I'm saying is Roman Reigns is a spectacular champion. That look at the emotion and the hatred that he's drawing right now from this. Like, this is unprecedented. You're not going to get this chance again for a long time to have someone like this. And All I'm saying is you let Cody really finish the story. And the story really finishes when he gets that rematch and faces the adversity and overcomes the adversity that you need to really overcome to win something from a champion this spectacular. And I think that's the story. And I think now, and I will let you go, I have to say this, now you get a completely different dynamic where on SmackDown, Roman can admonish the Usos. He can say things like, you lost your titles, blah, blah, blah. You're going to have so many things interwoven into this that couldn't have been if Roman didn't win. You're going to have a Cody who is, he's not going to give up. It's not going to be Drew McIntyre Clash at the Castle where he ends up singing and with Tyson Fury and he never even asks for another rematch, even though he got screwed by Solo. That's not going to happen here, man. And that's what I want your opinion on. I'm a one-caller person. I'm not going to ask about women's matches or anything. This is it. But I don't understand how people don't get that perspective of how incredible this will be when Cody finally does climb that mountain. He's not done. This is not done by any means.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the call, Brad. I do enjoy hearing the different perspectives as much as I may disagree with you and Reverend Keith and all these people. Like it is a lot more fun to have a back and forth when we don't all agree on the same thing and see everything the same way, right? That's a lot more interesting because it makes me take on other perspectives, and I do enjoy that. I do think you have a point about the adversity, and ultimately you do want your babyface to beat adversity and climb that mountain. I think you could argue that Cody faced adversity in this match just by virtue of facing someone the level of Roman Reigns. That in and of itself is adversity. When you have a champion who's been on top of the mountain for 900 plus days, that is adversity. When you have Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa on the outside, when you have the Usos interfering, that is adversity. It's not the long-term storytelling adversity that Brad is talking about, but it is a level of adversity. I never got the sense that fans, if there was a hesitancy to get behind Cody Rhodes because he was gifted the Royal Rumble win by going in number 30, because he didn't earn it by beating months and months of top-level opponents to get here, then I could see that argument. But that was not, that wasn't the fan reaction. The fans were not hesitant to buy into Cody Rhodes because he had not faced adversity. And I think, the preaching of the patience is fine, but I think, Brad, you kind of make your own point about why maybe that's not the best idea, and that's pointing out all the people who are upset about this result. Those are people that WWE risks losing as viewers and risks losing going along for this ride. Because maybe WWE did too good of a job of setting people up to think that Cody Rhodes was going to win here by talking about finishing the story. Right? That was so, if you didn't phrase it that way, if you didn't say finish the story, because, Brad is arguing the story's not done, why then have the announcers hammer home the idea that this moment is finishing the story for Cody Rhodes? Why plant that seed in the brains of fans that what they're seeing is Cody Rhodes finishing his story? If you didn't really want this to be the finish of the story, like WWE has no one to blame but themselves for setting expectations to the point where fans are, yes, rightfully, I think, disappointed that Cody Rhodes didn't win this match. And so, you point to the fans who are maybe irrationally upset that Cody Rhodes didn't win, but they're the ones who, may not have the patience to see this story through. So I think WWE, and maybe they hammered it home so hard because they did want people to believe that Cody was going to win. And they did want people to take it hard when Cody lost. But when you do that, you do risk fans getting so upset that they're going to throw their hands up and say, look, new regime, same as the old regime. Vince McMahon always had a problem with finishing that story for the babyfaces. And even if this is not the end, even if Cody goes on to win at Backlash or SummerSlam or wherever it is, you're going to have fans who aren't going to go on that ride. They're going to say, I've been down this road too many times. I've had you know, Lucy pulled the football out from under me too many times with this booking by WWE, and I've had it. And so that is the risk that WWE takes. I don't know if maybe they expected the reaction to be at this level on social media that it's been. Maybe it means nothing. You know, maybe, yeah, I remember when Daniel Bryan didn't win the Royal Rumble and it was all cancel the WWE Network hashtag trending and all that jazz. And you know, you looked at the numbers and it didn't really affect the network. Nobody canceled in droves like it looked like it was going to. So maybe this is just going to be a blip on the booking radar. And by next week, you know, Raw ratings will be high tomorrow night, obviously. And maybe it'll be just a blip on the booking radar. But we're talking about the here and now, and that's all we have to talk about. And right now there's a lot of upset people who may wake up tomorrow and say, it's just wrestling. It's not a big deal. But there might be a handful of people also who just say, you know what, I'm done with WWE. It's not worth it anymore. And so that's the risk. I do want to finish up tonight by going back to John's email from yesterday. I read part one yesterday. He sent this in a couple of weeks ago. Didn't get to it because it got sent to my spam folder for WNIALivecast@gmail.com. And I do want to – he gave us some predictions, so I want to see – you know, I think it's a good time to go through and see how right John was. So he starts with the Universal Championship match. He says, the buildup has been relatively poor, I think, because it feels like it's in the shadow of the Sami Zayn bloodline feud, and Roman has been absent too much, I think, and Rhodes has been somewhat clumsily inserted into the Zayn-Usos-Kevin Owens story to cover for the fact that Reigns hasn't been around much. I was relatively fine with Roman coming in and out and working more part-time schedule over the last year or so, and it makes him seem more special when he does appear. But this is WrestleMania season, and even The Rock came back to build up WrestleMania 28 once in a lifetime versus John Cena, and he appeared like 5 or 6 weeks in a row on Raw without missing a single Raw. If Reigns is missing these shows for family reasons or something, then I understand, but if he could have been around every week, this was the time of the year to do it. Winner, Roman Reigns. I think Roman retains, most likely due to some kind of bloodline interference, or maybe he wins clean, but I think either way, I am 100% of the opinion he retains, because I am skeptical that Cody is seen as, quote, the next Roman/Cena/Austin, unquote, because of his age and wear and tear on his body, and Roman has been champion for nearly 3 years, so I would imagine they will go for the easy option of keeping the titles on him until maybe Austin Theory is seen as ready, or someone else, or The Rock is available next year, and they want to keep him champion for that to further sell that match if that needs any more selling. Down Women's Championship, Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley. Build-up has been pretty good, but not necessarily spectacular, I don't think. It feels like they're grooming Ripley to win her first singles women's title, and she's been a badass for a while now, and I think the best thing about Judgment Day. Charlotte's been very good as a babyface as well, I think playing the veteran who's damn proud of her career and achievements and defending her honor. Winner, Rhea Ripley. Raw Women's Championship, Bianca Belair versus Asuka. Build-up has been kept to the basics, with very little reliance on promos. Asuka is an established challenger, and Belair has been a good babyface opposite her. It's not necessarily a hot match going in, but the match itself should be excellent. Winner, Bianca Belair. Brock Lesnar versus Omos. Not much needs to be said. Beast versus Giant. 3 minutes or under, it's fine. Winner, Lesnar. Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul. I know almost nothing about Paul other than his in-ring ability, so I think the match could be a good to great match athletically. His performance in their face-to-face promo was good heel work, and Rollins, at least his song, is over, so I think this has been one of the better builds. Incorporating Miz into it makes sense. Winner, Logan Paul. United States Championship, Austin Theory versus John Cena. Now, this is a bit of a wild card because it largely depends on Cena's physical conditioning, ring shape, and or how much he's willing to do physically. He just hasn't been in the ring all that much over the last year, but I'm sure he has pride in his performance and wouldn't have agreed to the match just to phone it in. I predict a decent and potentially great 3 to 10 minute high-energy match full of big spots and near falls and potentially some walking brawl elements if they want to extend the length. The buildup has been fine, although they could have built Theory or the U.S. Championship up more and made Cena desperately want to win it. Winner, Austin Theory. Becky Lynch, Lita, and Trish Stratus versus Damage Control. Legendary babyfaces win and vanquish the heels. Not the greatest buildup, but I'm sure the match will be good. Winners, Becky, Lita, and Trish. Edge versus Finn Balor, Hell in a Cell. The Hell in a Cell stipulation certainly adds something to the match that wasn't all that hot going in, but I think it should be a good match if kept to the right length, and I trust the performers to deliver. Winner, Balor. I would normally go for the babyface at WrestleMania, but Edge got the pin in the tag match at Elimination Chamber, and I think Priest interferes. Intercontinental Championship, Gunther versus Sheamus versus Drew McIntyre. Gunther has been built up very well, and his reign has been amazing. Sheamus and Drew have had good moments and are credible challengers. Should be a good match. Winner, Gunther. undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship, the Usos versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, probably the best thing on WWE TV for a while, and I think should be an excellent match. Really hot feud and has made me rooting for the babyfaces. Owens has had a believable slow burn skeptical reaction to trusting working with Zayn again after the past year or so. Winners, Zayn and Owens. Bobby Lashley versus Bray Wyatt, not much needs to be said, not really much going on. Winner Wyatt, due to some hocus-pocus, although it depends if they want to build Lashley up as a potential challenger for Roman post-Mania. Dominic Mysterio versus Rey Mysterio, another match with excellent build-up, even though Rey shouldn't really go from saying he won't fight his son to doing just that in a matter of weeks, and great performances, even if I could never quite buy the whole father versus son storyline in a realistic way. The performers have clearly tried to make it as believable as possible. Winner, Dominic. Rey loves his son so much that he isn't willing to cross the barrier of doing what's needed to beat him and is conflicted, even being in the match. And Dominic takes advantage to cheat to win. Thank you, John, for those predictions. Actually did a pretty nice job there on guessing that. So really appreciate you emailing in. And thanks to everyone for calling in tonight, for emailing. Don't forget, we're back here 8 p.m. Eastern next Sunday night. I believe Kelly Wells will be filling in for me on Easter weekend next week. So he'll be here along with a co-host taking you through the fallout from WrestleMania on Raw and SmackDown this week. Certainly going to be a lot to talk about next week, so I hope you'll join him in 8 p.m. Eastern on Sunday night, pwtorchdailycast.com. I am Greg Parks, PW Torch columnist. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. It's been a pleasure. Until next time, if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.